won't forget this. People will not forget this. They might forget baseball, but they will not forget why baseball did not resume in this moment. And look, cynicism is bad. You know, if you're going to be a sports fan, you know, if you want people to buy into sports and support your team and cheer and have allegiances, and heroes, and all of that stuff that's part of the mythology of sport, the one way you want to kill that in a second, make people cynical. Mm-hmm. Make them think it's just about cash, that everybody's a mercenary, that everybody's greedy.
I want to just start the program this morning by directing you to our website, sportsnet.ca. And on the front page there, you'll see an in conversation with Ron McLean. But just to the right of that, Donovan Bennett, our friend, has written a piece, and it is headlined, "Black People Are Dying, White Athletes Need to Speak Out." I would just simply encourage you to go to sportsnet.ca. Click on that link and please read that article and go into it with an open mind and a willingness to listen to someone eloquent like Donovan express his feelings about what's going on in North America and really the world right now, because cities like Amsterdam experienced protests and I would say quiet and peaceful reflection in some ways as we all go through this moment. It's heavy stuff, Ziggy, and it's right there in front of our faces. Right there in front of our faces. And one of the things that I thought we would do this morning, and we may in fact in an hour or so open up the phone lines, the notion of stick to sports. I have my own thoughts on that phrase. It is one that you don't often hear people say, but it is one that you often read on social media. Not often, but there are people who like to tweet that at us. There are people who like to text that to us at 590-590. I don't pretend to know the people who type those words out. But I do have a sense of what might be going through one's mind and the approach one may take and the thoughts one may have on world issues when that phrase is typed out. And I'm interested, and I think, Ziggy, you are too, we are interested in what that phrase means to you and whether that phrase is at all appropriate. Because we are people living in the world too. We don't go home and turn off our brains and not watch TV and not engage on social media. There is no such thing as, and I put in quotations, the media. There is no cabal, at least none which I'm aware of. I'm a citizen as much as you are, and I am witnessing the same thing you are right now. We may be interpreting it differently, but we are witnessing the very same things. Athletes are starting to speak out en masse here, Ziggy, and it's just a tough time, but a real time.
And everyone's trying to figure out what they can do to help, right? And that's now the next big question moving forward. What can you do? Is it speaking out in your community? Is it tweeting? Is it going to social media? Is it calling a friend that's a minority, African American or not, reaching out to them? Hey, what can I do? And I think that's the hard part for a lot of people, is that they don't know how to help. And you're seeing videos that are being put out right now. What you can do to help the crazy time we're living in right now. And I understand it's not just right now. It's been going on for, you can't even say years at this point.
Centuries.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And I know yesterday, you know, one of the ways to look at it is just, well, what's going to change? Is a tweet from an athlete going to help? It can help a little, but is it going to change things?
Is it, well, what do you mean by change things? Is it going to cause a massive tidal wave to sweep over everybody and just fix everything on the spot?
Yeah.
No, it's not.
And that's the thing, right? Because everyone feels helpless, right? And then what do? Do you stay silent? No, silence is not the way either. I mean, how many hockey players have actually said something? I'm surprised at how many players have come out and
pleasantly surprised.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
There aren't enough, but there's more than we thought. Like Jonathan Toews of Chicago, I thought had a really eloquent message.
Yeah, I read. Well, I had someone send me a screenshot of what he had to say. He said, "Hey, you know, this is a lot of what you were saying yesterday on the radio." And yeah, I mean, for me, I liked a lot of what he said, but what stuck out is kind of what we talked about yesterday is everyone saying, okay, the looting and the protesting and the riots and all this stuff is not right. I get that. But what's the alternative? Like what is a peaceful protest going to do?
What is a peaceful protest going to do?
Not what it's going to do, but it's what I said yesterday is what. It's hard to sit there and say, well, protest peacefully, go and vote, go home, don't loot. It's like, at what point? It's just like the pain is too deep that people are going to lash out. And lashing out is, I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just, I don't understand what other people are supposed to do.
Yeah. I mean, and there are a multitude of layers to that. People who want to litigate the type of protests that should be occurring are, if we did a Venn diagram, I think what we would get is pretty much a perfect circle of person who says, yeah, well, I'm okay with, I support you, but I don't think you should be causing a ruckus. Okay, so you want a peaceful protest, but then when Colin Kaepernick takes a knee, you tell him to stick to football and you say that a black man who is rich has no right to speak. So that's my point, right? You want the peace. It's not about the protest. It's about not wanting to hear about it.
Yeah.
Not be confronted with things that take us, the privileged, out of our comfort zones. Just give us our football every Sunday. Mash your heads together. Entertain me.
And I think it has to come, and you voiced this yesterday, it has to come from people in higher positions. It really does. That's at the end of the day, that's what it means. It's, and when I mean higher positions, I'm not talking about rich, privileged athletes. I'm talking about people bigger than that. And it's tough to say, and it's uncomfortable for a lot of people, but that's the point. I don't want this to be just another part of the cycle, right? Something terrible happens. Everybody gets upset. Everybody goes to social media. Everybody protests. And all of a sudden, it slowly just dissipates. And it's just another part of the cycle. That's what I don't want. What can actually be changed? That's what I want to see. And I don't have the answers. We keep going back to, well, go and vote. Go and peacefully walk down your street. Like people have had enough of that. Not just the white people had enough of it.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, there are white people marching with black people in the United States right now. And I would take it one step further. I don't believe that minorities, that black people are showing up to protests with bricks. I would like to know where some of those bricks and some of the other rocks and different things that are being thrown through windows. Who brought those? Who brought those to the gathering? Who dispersed those items to the gathering?
Yeah.
I think it would horrify us. Well, maybe not horrify some, but I think it would horrify us know. I think there are white supremacist groups that infiltrate these things and pass this stuff out, and then that gets everybody riled up, and some of the damage starts, and then people point and say, they're looting, and they're out of control.
I understand that, and they have shown that in the media, and that's, who are these people? That's all I'm saying is, what is happening? But even aside from that, even if there is unpeaceful protest, what do you expect people that are protesting to do? It's like, be peaceful. How can you be peaceful? And I'm not saying go out and be violent, but it's a lot of what Jonathan Tay said. It's people are sick and the pain is so deep that they're not going to be peaceful. Colin Kaepernick did it. What happened?
Hasn't thrown a pass in the NFL since the 2016 season. Suppressed. Hasn't even been employed.
No one has signed him.
Eric Reed, his good friend who played with him in San Francisco, did manage to play for the Carolina Panthers for a couple of years, during which time he claims, and I believe him, but during which time he claims he was subjected to an inordinate and unusual number of piss tests for PEDs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And now, as we presumably and hopefully head towards some kind of a 2020 NFL season, Eric Reed finds himself unemployed and struggling to find work once again. And it was not a smooth transition out of San Francisco and into Carolina. He didn't go from A to B. He went from A to B with a break in between. He didn't find work right away.
Mm-hmm.
And he paid a price himself for standing beside and kneeling beside Colin Kaepernick and staying true to his friend and to the cause for really its duration. And it is ongoing. And the other thing with Kaepernick, and Eric Reed is as much to do with this as Colin, is the work is being done. I mean, that the other argument that has been thrown out there, particularly when Kaepernick was at the forefront of all of this, as a player in 2016. And well, what is this rich man doing? Is he actually putting his money where his mouth is? Is he actually putting his time where his mouth is? Well, Colin Kaepernick was going into Oakland, into inner city, Oakland, inner city, San Francisco, and working with underprivileged kids, working with the marginalized. Know your rights. Know your rights. If you don't know what know your rights is, Google it. Colin Kaepernick is educating young minority kids, young black kids, on their constitutional rights. He is teaching them. He is teaching them their constitutional rights so that when they are profiled, when they are unusually pulled over, they are aware of what their rights as American citizens are. How far that gets them in a particular incident will have a lot to do, I'm sure, with who they're dealing with. But he wants them aware of their rights. He has put millions of dollars into this. The work is being done. Just because it's not being proliferated en masse, there is some social media work that puts it out there what Colin is up to. But just because he's not wearing a big symbol that says, "Look at me, look at what I'm doing every single day," doesn't mean the work isn't being done. And I would say this too. We got a lot to say. Those who don't want someone like Colin Kaepernick speaking up, shut up and stick to football, or shut up and stick to whatever it is you're doing. If you don't want to hear from Colin Kaepernick, is it truly because you don't think a wealthy black man has the right to speak? Because I'll flip the script. How about I grant you that for the sake of this argument? You don't want to hear from Colin Kaepernick because he's wealthy. Forget about how he grew up or didn't grow up or what he may have had or not had. We don't know for sure. But let's just, for the sake of this discussion, grant that side of the argument. Colin Kaepernick should be quiet because he's wealthy. Would you then, if somehow a poor black man or a poor black woman procured a bullhorn and went to a street corner in Compton, California, and started shouting into the bullhorn the fear, the challenges they face, the things they go through on a daily basis. Would you listen to that person? And if your answer to that question is no, then you have no stance and no place to speak about what Colin Kaepernick should or should not be doing. Because if your answer to the question is no, I wouldn't listen to that person with the bullhorn, then it isn't about the wealth or lack thereof of the particular person doing the advocating. It's that you don't want to hear about it at all. You want to deny that reality. And I can tell you, when you deny someone's reality, deny someone's experience on this planet, you contribute to the denial of that individual's humanity. And there is nothing more grotesque than diminishing another human being's humanity. So-called punching down. It's what the weak do. It's what losers do. It's what those who actually are fearful do. And I am with you, Ziggy, and we have said it yesterday, and we have repeated it today. And I am in 100% concert with Donovan Bennett's article on sportsnet.ca. I would add the one caveat. Where are the rich white people? Not the millionaire athletes like Carson Wentz and Jonathan Taves who have spoken up. Where are the billionaire owners of these sports teams? Don't give me the NFL shield and some lousy three-paragraph statement. Where are the individual owners? Not necessarily in unison, but each of their own accord, the 32 of them, speaking up. Where are the NHL owners, the Major League Baseball owners, the NBA owners? Greg Popovich was brilliant yesterday. We had Dave Zirin on this show at 8:30 yesterday morning, sports editor for The Nation, Edge of Sports podcast host. Greg Popovich was on Dave Zirin's podcast, an episode that dropped yesterday afternoon, and had a lot to say. People are speaking up, but we need the uber wealthy to join in here and not just speak, but take action.
While Jim Dolan's email to all the employees got out yesterday on how the Knicks are not going to say anything. And I don't know what you thought of that, but I know there's a lot of people that were not happy with the way he's approaching this, because leadership, everything comes from the top. And we just talked about this, how we want the people in power to actually speak out and say something. And
I only want them doing that if they're interested in change. I don't want anything disingenuous.
Of course.
And my concern is that not enough of them are interested in change, because benefit from the current system.
So then is Jim Dolan, I mean, you can look at his email to all the employees and get mad at what he had to say, but would you rather him not saying anything because he doesn't want change? Or would you rather someone say something that, okay, yeah, they're just saying it to say it. It's they don't really believe that. What would you want? Would you rather a guy like Jim Dolan just to stay silent?
Well, I want Jim Dolan to say what he believes. I don't want Jim Dolan to say anything he doesn't believe. I don't want him to give us platitudes. I don't want him to patronize anybody. If this is what he believes, then this is what he believes. And this is what Jim Dolan said. We know that some of you have asked about whether our company is going to take or going to make a public statement about the killing of George Floyd by a Minneapolis police officer. I want you to know I realize the importance of this issue. Therefore, I want you to understand our internal position. This is a turbulent time in our country. The coronavirus and civil unrest have taken their toll on our way of life. We at Madison Square Garden stand by our values of a respectful and peaceful workplace. We always will. As companies in the business of sports and entertainment, however, we are not any more qualified than anyone else to offer our opinion on social matters. What's important is how we operate. Our companies are committed to upholding our values, which include creating a respectful workplace for all, and that will never change, What we say to each other matters. How we treat each other matters. And that's what will get us through this difficult time. Here's the sentence that bothers me most. As companies in the business of sports and entertainment, we are not any more qualified than anyone else to offer our opinion on social matters. You have to be suddenly you have to be a social scientist to be able to speak to things.
Mm-hmm. And that's what, you don't have
to be a social scientist.
I mean, there's a lot of good in what he said in his email to everyone, but that's the issue, is like, he doesn't want to get the Knicks.
I don't want to get my hands dirty.
Yeah. And that's the problem, right? And that's why you're not hearing people step up and do something. It's not my problem. That's all it's saying, right?
It's not my problem.
So I think that's more of an issue than people getting upset by some athletes that aren't saying anything on Twitter. I don't put the two in the same, I don't see them as equal. I really don't.
Right. I just think, you know, and Jonathan Toews did a really nice job with it. Jonathan Toews is not going to change the world. But maybe there's a teammate that he's had or that he has or that he will have who is just a little bit more comfortable and may think coming into the Chicago Blackhawks, my captain's a pretty approachable guy if I have a tough situation. Like, it's just little tiny incremental steps that get taken by messages like the one Jonathan Toews sent out. So I'm not going to laud Jonathan Toews any more than he is deserving. He did what I think should be done. And he stands out because he did it in a sea of people who typically don't. But I do think little tiny incremental steps are taken when guys speak out, because it's a some ways conscious and some ways subconscious subliminal message to others that, hey, I'm on your side. I'm an ally here. If Jonathan Toews has a young black teammate join the team at 20, 21, 22 years old at some point in the next year or two or three, maybe the message that he sent out yesterday makes a difference in that young man's life. And I think that is hugely important. So it's small increments.
Small, yeah, and I
not necessarily big tidal waves.
Yeah, and I understand that. I had a friend when every time I say, well, why does it matter? Or does what you're going to do matter? I had a friend send me a quote saying, and I don't know if this is cheesy or not, but it's just like, does a snowflake feel responsible? And it's, I know it's ridiculous, and I forget who the quote was from. But you just think to yourself, okay, yeah, when you look at it like that, everything matters. So yeah, what you do in your daily life matters. That tweet matters. What you say, how you act, that matters. I know you don't think it, you know, whether it's something of, you know, social justice or whether it's you looting on the ground and throwing garbage on it. Does it matter if you didn't put the can in the garbage can? Not really. But if everybody does it, yeah, we have a huge mess here.
And just to add to your point, Ziggy, to the friend who asked you that question, does what you say really matter? If the answer to that question is just a quick no and it shuts you up, what if the rest of the world, what if every other human being world took the very same approach? Then none of us would speak. And nothing would change. And very clearly, things need to change. And significantly.
And then you can go to the whole voting thing. Does your vote really matter? Yes, it does. And I know we've talked about leadership a lot, but I still think it has to come from the top down. And that's very difficult in today's climate. It's very difficult. And I just, it's, for me, it's if you can't improve the situation, don't say anything. Because we've had people of leadership during when all the NFL players are kneeling, call them sons of bees. And when that happens, then you know there's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
People of Minneapolis, when they're protesting, when you call them thugs, that's a problem. And that's what makes everything worse. Everything. So it does start from the top.
Well put. Chris Swanson is the Genesee County Sheriff, Genesee County, Michigan, which encompasses the city of Flint. Flint is a predominantly black city. Flint has had undrinkable drinking water, lead-filled drinking water, for years now. Chris Swanson is also a former athlete, and as sheriff of Genesee County, he didn't push back on protesters. He joined their march over the weekend. Now, I want to be very clear, when we bring Chris Swanson on, we are not going to laud him for doing the right thing. Doing the right thing should just be what's done. But we will ask him questions about recruiting. How are prospective police officers vetted to ensure that they don't have ties to racist organizations or any sort of white supremacist ideologies? We'll talk about the Flint water situation, and we'll talk about what motivates him to be a police officer. Our good friend David Amber at the top of the 8 o'clock hour, and former Blue Jays catcher J.P. Arencibia at 7:30. We've got $200, we hope, in UNTUCKit gift cards to give away. We'll do that at 6:50. And Hugh Burrell is here to Burrell the lead. That's next. J.P. Arencibia, an hour from now. $200 in UNTUCKit gift cards to give away in about 20 minutes. May open up the phone lines and read some texts at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. We have dealt with the lead over the first 25 minutes of the program, Hugh Burrell, and now you are here to Burrell the lead, and you're very excited to share some breaking news.
Some breaking news fresh off the wires.
Is this news going to break me? That's what I need to know.
It might put a smile on your face. Carol Baskin, remember her? She has been awarded the zoo once owned by Tiger King Joe Exotic. That court ruling coming down yesterday. So she takes over ownership. What's it called? The Wynwood. I forget the name of it. Can't find it in the article.
Here. I haven't been.
Yeah, have not been.
But it is on. I have a long list of things I'd like to do in my life. Visit Florence and Naples and Rome, see the Scottish Highlands,
yes.
Go to Paris, and then go to Podunk, Oklahoma, to an old zoo that used to keep tigers.
Yeah, so Carol Baskin is now the proud owner of that facility. Good for her. All right, let's get to it. Gentlemen, he was the 2016 Rookie of the Year. Two-time Pro Bowler. His team is 40-24 in games that he starts. He's led his team to the playoffs two of the 4 years he's been in the league, but he can't seem to get the contract that he wants. His name is Dak Prescott, and he's quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. Why can't Prescott's camp and the Cowboys come to an agreement?
Is it because he wants like $35 to $40 million a year?
Apparently Dallas is offering a 5-year deal at $35 a year.
Take it.
But Dak wants a 4-year deal. Seems like
fire the agent.
Yeah, you think so?
I mean, who else is to blame for this?
Gerald.
So Dak is 26, and I think he wants the 4-year deal because when it's up, he'll be 30, and that's kind of in the sweet spot for a lot of quarterbacks. He doesn't want to be tied to that extra year, but to me, you're going to let that 1 year derail everything?
Yeah,
I would love to just hear the conversation that he's having.
Yeah.
Who else is giving him advice?
I mean, is Dak dug in or is his agent dug in?
I obviously don't know how each individual quarterback reacts in this situation, but if you're up for a new deal, there has been a trend in the last 2 or 3 years where your contract extension for even the most temporary period of time sets the record as highest paid quarterback, right? Jimmy Garoppolo for 100 seconds or so when he signed his extension with the 49ers became the highest paid quarterback, or highest paid, the largest contract signed by a quarterback in NFL history. Aaron Rodgers has since usurped that. There are others. So part of that, Hugh, I think is if I'm going to lock in, I got to make sure that I'm in that conversation.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to so badly outperform, and people are going to say, how could you possibly outperform a $35 million annual salary? But you don't want to so badly outperform the market. So that's how I'll put it. Outperform the market that 2 years from now you feel locked into something that has left you in the lurch,
and it'll be
at $35 million a year.
Go ahead, Zach.
And there's probably a lot more to these stories. A lot of times when you're going to sign a contract, and we've seen this with Scottie Pippen in basketball, we've seen it in hockey, when you go to sign a contract and you either see something where, okay, this doesn't add up, this Dak Prescott situation does not add up, a lot of times you can look to the previous deal.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, that wasn't fair. I outperformed it. Now I want what I want in this next deal. Yeah. And maybe that's something what you're seeing right now. I mean, 2016, he signed a 4-year deal for $680,000 per year.
He's a rookie, though.
I get that. Yeah. But at the same time, you've got Matt Ryan, Kirk Cousins, and Aaron Rodgers, who didn't make the playoffs in 2018, making, what, $30 million a year?
Yeah.
That's difficult. It's hard, right?
Yeah, and you see guys like Carson Wentz and Jared Goff getting huge money. And would you rather have them or Dak Prescott? I'd probably rather have Dak Prescott myself. But so the team, Dallas, has until 4 o'clock on July 15th to sign Prescott to a long-term extension. If that doesn't happen, Prescott will likely sign the franchise tag and play out this season on a 1-year, $31.4 million deal. So either way, Dak's making at least $31 million this year.
It is, and you know me, I'm always pro player and get paid, but the franchise tag, which causes such constipation for guys, the franchise tag sets you up for life. 1 year, $31.4 million guaranteed.
Ask Kirk Cousins.
Yeah. He lived off of it for, what, 2 or 3 off seasons in Washington, and then signed a fully guaranteed deal in Minnesota.
And so what are the exact rules of the franchise tag? Who has to agree with it, and who can go to, can the player go to the team, or does the player have no?
No, he's got no. So what happens is, and I'm going to speak in generalities here because I don't have the dates committed to memory. If team and player, you have one franchise tag per. So if team and player can't come to an agreement, team says, we're franchising so-and-so. Team and so-and-so then have until a particular date to come to a long-term contract agreement. And if not, so-and-so plays under the franchise tag for the coming season and cannot negotiate a contract extension past that time and will be paid that amount of money guaranteed. They can't just...
And I believe
they can't cut you.
It's an average of the top 5 salaries?
I believe it is. It's at the average position, of the top 5 salaries.
At that position.
Yeah. Which if you're a quarterback, you're...
Is big.
And that's for 4 years. They have to do that.
Yeah.
Well, no, the franchise tag goes year to year. Like, you're only franchise tagged 1 year at a time. Like, they can open this up again after... Well, if hopefully they get a deal, they can slap the franchise tag on it. You're right. And then negotiate up to that hard deadline. Then after the deadline, everything just resets. And
I don't know. I mean, it sounds great, but I don't know if I'm totally on board with that if I'm a player. I really don't. I mean, I know of the franchise tag. I don't know of all the details. Like Scotty explained.
That money's fully guaranteed, though. The franchise tag money, fully guaranteed.
And that's the part of football that I have to keep reminding me that, right?
Non-guaranteed,
In the NHL,
more and more contracts
guaranteed.
Are starting to be guaranteed, but
there's guaranteed chunks of money.
They've got a long way to go before they get to the NBA and Major League Baseball territory. Well, what did we learn from the match two with Tiger Phil, Peyton Manning, and Tom Brady? Well, we learned that Brady needs better pants. That's the first thing. He also doesn't trust his driver. I'm not even sure if Brady took his driver out of his bag. Well, it's John Daly to the rescue, one of the biggest hitters on tour when he played. Daly telling TMZ, yeah, he could fix Brady. Easy peasy.
Tom could hit a driver. That's the easiest club in the bag to hit. It's the biggest face in your bag. And somebody's not helping him. We need to get him. We need to get his driver right. We got to get him a driver. You know, I'm down in Clearwater. He's a buck now. So if he wants to come out, we'll go play golf or I'll meet him. I can help him in 10 minutes. It's so easy to hit a driver. I mean, he'd hit it probably an extra 100 yards and the whole game, the game would change for him. And, you know, but his swing's not bad. He just needs to, it's all ball position and he needs to get some confidence in his driver. But let's put it this way. He's the greatest quarterback that ever lived. I could never do what he does. And, yeah. But I can help him do golf a little better.
Did John Daly just say it's easy to hit a driver? I respectfully disagree.
Well, he's a great driver of the ball, though.
Like, rip it and rip it.
Well, that's the best part of his game.
Yeah.
Can't putt. I mean, won a U.S. Open, but can't putt.
You know how we'll know Tom Brady hung out with John Daly? If Tom Brady's smoking a pack of menthols and eating cheeseburgers on the sideline in the second quarter. If the magic blueberries, if TB12 just goes up in smoke and he just turns into a cheeseburger eating, cigarette smoking monster on the sidelines.
I have to say, Daly looks great now. I mean, he had a lot of issues.
You can't pull fat.
No.
That's the greatest line he ever said. John Daly, why don't you get in shape? You can't pull fat.
Exactly.
Which is the true, best actually. Line ever.
Believe me, because I've tried. Yeah, but he looks great. I miss John Daly on tour. I love when he plays. He's still a huge crowd favorite. But, I mean, he was a huge hitter back in the day where he and Tiger were kind of going back and forth for driving distance leader on tour. I don't know if Daly would be in the top 15 now with the way these guys hit. Like Rory McIlroy, who's like 5 foot nothing, hits 335, 340-yard drives. Dustin Johnson's 350 on a regular basis.
But what would Daly be in his prime with today's equipment?
Oh.
See, that's the thing, right? Daly's got to be, what would he be, 50 years old now, 55?
Yeah, at least, at least that.
So if he's in his prime playing with today's equipment.
Yeah, oof. That's scary to think
grip
about.
It and rip it,
remember
baby.
Remember when he tried to hit one across the falls? Remember that?
That was crazy. Well, he put one into, 17 Mile Creek at Glen Abbey. On number, well, the way we play it, it's number 11. You know that big, you're an elevated tee?
Oh, yeah, it's a beautiful hole.
And
he
put it into the creek, which is so crazy to think about that.
That's nuts.
And they have a plaque there for it. Yeah. I remember him from 99 U.S. Open when he putts, remember he putted his ball off the green, I think twice.
Yeah.
And then it was moving. He finally just smacked it in the water or whatever. He was like, I'm out.
Just didn't care anymore. Thundering Waters down in Niagara Falls, John Daly's kind of signature course there. Imagine that. You get to use a driver off every hole almost. And could we one day see Conor McGregor and John Bones Jones coming off the top rope? Top WWE executive Triple H says he'd love to have Conor and Jones trade the octagon for the ring, adding McGregor's brash, cocky attitude would be a perfect fit when his UFC days are done. Meantime, I don't know if you guys saw this last night. The big upset on Raw. No, seriously. Rob Gronkowski lost his 24/7 belt to R-Truth while trying to film a TikTok video. And coincidentally, we have the audio.
Yo, Goon, this TikTok dance is going to be epic, man.
It's going to go viral, bro.
Yeah, thank you for helping out. Always helping with everything. Now you're videoing me doing the most viral TikTok dance ever. Thank you, dog. I'm the champion. All right, you ready?
I got you. Don't worry. I got you.
Wait a second. Who is this guy?
He's just flipping mulch. Don't worry about him.
Okay. Wait a second. Wait a minute. You can't get the touchdown if you don't flip your mulch, Mr. Rob Gronkowski. Seriously?
You gotta be serious, man. You got a new career started. Come on, let's go. You're with the Bucks now. Come on, let's do this.
So R-Truth... who was dressed up as a gardener in disguise, says you can't catch a touchdown pass if you don't flip your mulch. Now, I don't have a home,
Ziggy, I live in a condo. What does flipping your mulch mean?
You don't know what flipping your mulch
means?
Is
that what the kids are calling it these days?
Cosmo Kramer, you got to mulch, Jerry. You've got to.
You got it.
First of all, there are multiple kinds of mulch. It's not just one kind of mulch. Let's get that straight.
Oh, yeah, you can't screw that up.
I've gone with the red, and it's okay. But it kind of fades quicker than the black mulch, yeah. So I go with the black mulch.
How do you flip mulch? Like, is there a certain style you use?
When I put my mulch down, I usually go with the shovel, and then I go with the hand, and I kind of massage it.
Massage the mulch?
Any time for a commercial.
You're just kind of leaning there.
I guarantee you right now, we have a listener. And somebody get on Twitter or on our text line and tell us and tell me and tell them, Huey and Scotty, that you've actually got down on your knees and massaged with your hands the mulch into the bed because the flower bed.
I don't
or
want
the tree
anybody
bed.
Massaging their mulch in bed or whatever it is you're talking about.
Sounds dirty. Well, I guess it would be dirty. Right?
It's very dirty. It's mulch.
Yeah.
All right, we got $200, we hope, in Untuckit gift cards to give away. 416-870-0590, 416-870-0590. We play our favorite game, All or Nothing, and if you want to be the contestant, get to calling because we play it in minutes. And here's how we play All or Nothing. Three true or false questions. You get the first one right, great. You get the first one wrong, that's okay. You're not eliminated. But you got to get all three right or all three wrong. And if you do, you'll win $200 in Untuckit gift cards. We did not have a winner yesterday, so the amount carries over. Steve is our Tuesday morning contestant. Steve, good morning. What's up?
Not bad. How are you guys?
We're great.
What's going on, Steve? All right. With sports on pause, our trivia first question is, the Leafs have the second most points of the seven NHL Canadian teams. True or false?
True.
That is correct. Edmonton has 83, Toronto 81, Winnipeg 80, Calgary 79, Vancouver 78, Montreal 71, and Ottawa, home of Hugh Burrell, 62.
That's right.
Who had the Oilers with the most points among Canadian teams?
Nobody.
So you're in great shape, Steve, because now you just got to focus on getting the next two questions correct, and $200 in Untuckit gift cards are yours.
All right, Steve, are you a fan of the wrestling?
Yeah.
All right. Well, the WWE is looking to recruit another MMA star. Executive Triple H says bringing in Francis Ngannou would be a dream. Is that true or false? Francis Ngannou.
False.
Yes. I was actually talking about notorious Conor McGregor.
All right, Steve. We're close here now. Russ Courtnell, the former Leaf, is celebrating his 55th birthday today. In his career, Russ Courtnell had fewer points than his brother Jeff Courtnell did in his NHL career. Russ Courtnell had fewer career NHL points than his brother Jeff. True or false?
False.
Oh.
Ah. All right, thanks, guys.
You know what? And that sucks.
I would have gone. I think I would have.
That
go,
was a tough one.
I would
Steve.
Go false too. I really didn't know that.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I would have said, like when I think of Russ Courtnell,
he's the better
right shot centerman, pretty high end offensive guy. But Jeff Courtnell. Well, and actually, they played almost the same number of games. Russ had 1,029 games. Jeff had 1,049. Jeff had 799 points to Russ's 744. Yeah. That sucks.
I really didn't know that.
Yeah. That was a tricky one, producer Mike Gentile. He's bringing the heat.
And Steve answered false as quickly as I would have.
Oh, yeah.
I would have definitely said Russ had more.
I would have been on the Untuckit website during the mid-pression.
Just picking out something. I think I'll get this one.
Just finding something that wouldn't tuck.
Yep.
Have you ever tucked in one of your Untuckit shirts, you?
That's sacrilegious. Oh, my. I could be arrested for that.
Do you ever put in just one half sometimes?
Nope.
Just
yeah, have you ever done the Wayne Gretzky with an Untuckit shirt? Just so it's just like...
No,
tucked it into your hockey pants or no?
Wayne Gretzky, fellow Untuckit spokesperson, by the way.
Do you guys ever get together?
For a while, it was like me, Wayne Gretzky, and Drew Brees.
When he comes,
No.
I was gonna say, do you guys ever get together and go for lunch and discuss the Untuckit brand? And
we
hey,
should.
Wayne, hey, you know what? Hey, Hugh. Or, no. Hey, Wayne, have you ever thought about tucking in the one half? I think it would make a great commercial.
That's a great look. You could start some.
Oh. That oh wow is that we need more of that. More of that in our lives. Chris Swanson is the Genesee County Sheriff, which encompasses Flint, Michigan. And he is the sheriff who marched with protesters over the weekend. We will talk to him at 8:30. David Amber is the host of, or one of the hosts of Hockey Night in Canada, the NHL on Sportsnet, and one of the hosts of Hockey Central at noon. He'll join us for his weekly hit at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. Former Blue Jays catcher J.P. Arencibia will be along at 7:30. Major League Baseball has issued a counterproposal to the players' counterproposal of the owner's original proposal. I think that made sense.
Who's a what now?
Yes. And we will talk to JP about the likelihood of a baseball season, even if it's 50 or 60 games in 2020. And the phone lines are open at 416-870-0590, 416-870-0590. We'll take your texts as well at 590-590. Stick to sports. Do you believe that the sports world should be sticking to sports? And if so, why? We'll have that conversation next. We get texts. And you can always text us to 590-590. I can't really read the entirety of Doug and Branford's tweet, but let's just say he's not a big fan of Carol Baskin. Carol Baskin has apparently won the lawsuit.
Yes.
And now is the owner of the animal farm that Joe Exotic used to have in Oklahoma.
Yes, the official name of it.
The Greater Wynwood Casino and Resort?
Not yet.
Oh.
Not yet, anyway. The
what font is your text?
It's
there,
big
Hugh?
Enough I can see it from space. You're not as old
is
as
it
me.
Big enough that you can see it right
the
in front of your face?
Greater Wynwood Exotic Animal Park.
Oh, okay. I thought resort and casino would be in there somewhere. A couple of people with thoughts on Ziggy and the mulching. Josh in Burlington. Yes, I dumped the bag and massage/spread it. Ziggy is doing it right. And Mitch up there in Orangeville, I used to be an arborist, and after we planted a new tree, we would mulch afterwards. So yes, Siggy, I know what massaging mulch is like.
Sound like pros.
You mulch,
they know what it's about. They have to turn it over. You have to massage it. You gotta wet it down.
You mulch massagers.
You're happy
that you're a homeowner again, right? That you've got a nice little lawn. Do you have a big garden, colorful flowers and stuff, or do you put in the work and the time?
There's
or what?
Some flowers. It's been a lot. I told you, I have a bad left elbow and shoulder. I can't do what I usually do to the yard.
Do you have any water features?
There's no, well, I have flooding in my backyard. How's that for a water feature? I get ducks from time to time.
The mini Bellagio fountains going on.
No, it's just straight flooding.
Straight up flooding.
Do the ducks actually come and chill?
Yeah, sometimes
do you feed them bread?
No, we discourage.
Who's we?
Well, just the neighborhood.
Oh, the neighborhood. You and Doris agree on something. Don't feed the wildlife. Don't feed the fowl.
Honestly, I think it's Doris.
Fair or foul.
You want to know what? Do you want to go with Doris right now, or are we moving on to something more important?
Well, we will. We got a call on the line we want to get to, but is it a quick Doris story, or should we wait a few minutes?
We'll save that to the end of the show. That's always a good way to...
We'll save it to the end of the show.
Is it new?
It's an old one.
But has a new episode dropped in Ziggy versus Doris?
But I will say this about Doris. Some of my flooding is because of Doris, and I can give you the reasons why. But we'll tell the story later. What would you do if you had a house and you had flooding on it because of your neighbor? Let's see if what the listeners will... I'll see what advice they give me.
Oh, here
we go. We'll drop it in a little bit. We'll go to this, and then at the end of this segment, we'll tell it, because I want to see the text come in and give me some advice. So the last part of the show, I know what to do.
Doris has messed with your security light. She gave your air conditioning unit a vasectomy. Just snip, snip on the cords. Like, it's just been... Now you got flooding in your backyard because of something. Yes. Yes. You got flooding in your backyard as a result of Doris, or allegedly. We'll get into all of that. The phone lines are open. 416-870-0590. 416-870-0590. We, like you, are living in this world right now. And the images that we see often on our computer screens, on our TV screens, are mortifying, are horrifying, are worrying. The phrase "stick to sports" is one that we often see in our industry. We get it texted to us occasionally, 590-590. We get it tweeted to us at Scotty Mac Thinks, at Mike Zygmuntas, at UW Burrell, at Fan 590. And I've got my own thoughts on that phrase. I don't think that any citizen should be reduced or have their voice reduced because of the type of work that they do. We're all living in this world. We're all experiencing it. We all have our concerns and our fears. But I am throwing it open, and Ziggy has agreed. We are throwing it open to this conversation. Hugh is sitting in as well. The thought and notion of sticking to sports, because let's be honest, sometimes it's difficult. Should we stick to sports, or should we have the broader conversations? Because I don't think we can pretend that sports and politics, sports and life, don't intersect. 416-870-0590. And Charlie in Toronto wants to chime in. Charlie, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Scotty, Mac, and Ziggy. How you guys doing?
We're good.
You good, buddy?
I really appreciate you guys opening up. And by the way, I'm looking forward to hearing the end of the Doris story. I'll stick around afterwards and listen to it.
That's the hook. That's the hook.
But so I was talking to the producer about it, and you probably have the notes there, and he asked me what my opinion is, and my opinion is definitely leaning much more strongly into sticks to sports camp than not. But I want to add a little bit of nuance before I get into my main point, if I can. So when I stick to sports, yes, I think that's a good thing to do, because generally I think people, all people, not just athletes, not just journalists or broadcasters or anybody, should stick to speaking about things in detail that they know what the bleep they're talking about. And we have a major problem. We have many major problems, but one of the major problems we have in society today is that, you know, because of Twitter, because of social media, one week everyone thinks that they're an amateur epidemiologist. The next week everyone thinks they're an amateur counterterrorism expert. The next week everyone thinks that they're a constitutional expert, et cetera, et cetera. So what happens is people with, you know, you might have heard the expression before, a little bit of knowledge is a very dangerous thing. The background of that is that if a person doesn't know anything, they generally know they don't know anything, and they'll be like, okay, let me talk to some experts, let me talk to a variety of experts, let me get different, you know, smart people and find out. Or if they know a lot, then they can speak themselves as an expert. But when you know just a little bit, just what you saw in about 5 or 10 tweets, you tend to have the worst, most slanted opinions, because it's whatever appeals to your emotions. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, I will grant you that.
So just to continue, and then
okay.
I apologize. So that's sort of the starting point of the way I'm thinking about it. It's, we have a lot of narcissism in our society today from all sides. I'm not pointing out athletes, you know, or journalists or anything. You know, these people are good people. I have no doubt LeBron James is a good person, and you know, many of these other people are good people. They have good intentions. So the nuance that I wanted to add was, I think it's fine if Patrick Mahomes or LeBron or anyone else, if they say, I wish they would stick to more middle-of-the-road statements, because as somebody who works in the political field myself and has been a news junkie my entire life, and I do know a lot about current affairs, a lot. I've been reading the newspaper, three newspapers since I was like 6 years old, you know? It's basically how I learned to read. I hear the things that come out of people's mouths, including, I'm not talking about you guys, definitely, but I'm including sports broadcasters, and they start opining about these deep cultural issues. And for a variety of reasons, sports, you know, and entertainment tends to be in a bit of a bubble. Culture, actually, generally, very left-leaning bubble, very, very left-leaning bubble. And I'm not against the left or the right. I'm just saying that's just the way it is. Broadcasting, athletics, not the leagues themselves, but the athletes, entertainment, singers. These are very, 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 very left-leaning professions. So when you're talking to somebody who only agrees with you and only reinforces your own prejudice, again, whether you're right or left or Jewish or Christian, or it doesn't matter, right? Or gay or straight, you're going to tend to have those prejudices reinforced rather than get a broader view. So yes, I would prefer if athletes came out and they should express concern about the death of George Floyd. It was a murder. We could all see that. There's no question about that. But in terms of going deep, deep, deep and offering their deep analysis on what's right and sort of excusing large scale rioting and all that kind of stuff, I'd really rather they just send good wishes to the world, ask for an investigation and an arrest of the things that they know about, which is that it was a murder, because we could all see that. But they don't know about the bridal societal trends. They don't know about these things. They just don't know, and they never hear or rarely hear opposing opinions. So I really wish people, including myself, when you don't know about a subject, stick to what you know about, and otherwise talk to people who do know what they're talking about.
All right, Charlie in Toronto.
Very well thought out.
Yeah, I just think that if we all take that advice, then we all sit back. And I think it's very fair to say, because I have listened to people who obviously haven't lived for 250 or 300 years. Nobody does. But I have talked to people who live today who experience some pretty sad things, things that I have no experience with. I'm a white guy. I've never been racially profiled. So I suppose I can't speak to racial profiling because I've never experienced it. And yet when I talk to black friends of mine, they say, we actually need you to speak up. Donovan Bennett, in his piece, says that very thing. I'm tired of being asked to speak to crimes committed against my people. Mm-hmm. I'm tired of black athletes being expected the ones to always have to speak out for the crimes committed by others against us. We're looking for excuses to hide. We can't anymore. That's the counter. That's the counter.
Yeah.
So am I a social scientist? No. Am I a sociocultural expert? No. But I live in this world and I know what I see. And I do talk to people who have some insight as to what is going on. And I don't know. Maybe they're wrong. I don't think they are.
But further to Charlie's comments, and they were very well stated, and they were obviously very well thought out, and thanks for calling. You don't have to be a social scientist, and you don't have to speak to all of the experts. You don't have to have this mile deep knowledge of the issues to understand the difference between wrong and right.
Thank you.
That's it.
Yeah. And he did mention the left-leaning stuff. Well, okay, let's have a conversation about where one lies on the political spectrum if they are uber rich and are actually running a lot of these sports teams and leagues, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Are they ultra left? Like, I mean, it's not a right left thing. It's a right wrong thing. Really, that's what it is.
And a whole other side of it, and I don't know if this is what he was touching on, but I feel like whenever anybody, this is another part of it, it's like stick to what you know, stick to sports, athletes, just take middle ground. If you're an actor, I don't want to know what your political views are. I feel like sports and entertainment are the escape. And once people make their views known, it's like they get to know the people where it's like, oh no, I just want to know the goal scorer, Jonathan Toews.
Right.
I just want to know Robert De Niro, the guy that plays in all these movies. I don't want to know that he hates Donald Trump. I don't want to know that Jonathan Taze cares about racism in America and cultural differences. I feel like that's a whole another part of it where they
don't. And yet you get people on Twitter who shout down the De Niro's and the Taveses of the world, and they themselves are expressing a political opinion publicly.
Yes.
Maybe not to as large an audience, but I mean, one must appreciate the irony in that, I would think.
I think
you'd hope.
I think it's a slippery slope. I'm going to take a little bit of a different tack here, shockingly, when it comes to celebrities and espousing and pontificating. I think at times like this, yeah, we do need to hear from them because their opinion holds a lot of weight, holds a lot of sway. But just the day-to-day stuff, I really don't
need to hear about
a musician's take on something for the most part, unless it's warranted.
Yeah. Well, here's the problem. Here's the problem. The president of the United States is a reality television show host. So if we want to talk about celebrity, it got itself to the White House. And it has repeatedly. So
they elected Ronald Reagan.
That's my point.
As an actor.
Yeah. Right. So celebrity, your point is well taken, Hugh, but celebrity has infiltrated politics and not just from the outside.
What's the cult of celebrity that we live in right now? Everybody wants to be famous. Why are they famous? I don't know. They're famous for being famous. Kardashians, right? But everybody tunes into that show. Can't get enough. What do they think about this? Who cares?
Yeah, well, that I'll grant you. Yeah. I won't argue. Okay. I won't argue with you on that particular point. Catherine is in Toronto. Catherine, good morning.
Hi, good morning, guys. Thanks so much for all of your commentary on what's been going on in the States. I really appreciate all the insightfulness. I have a couple of points. The main one that I called in for was to say that I'm on the side that says that this does need to be talked about, and we shouldn't just be sticking to sports because it's a big deal. But I have a question, a very honest question to ask, and that is, would this be happening? Would all this talk be happening on the sports radio stations if sports was actually going on right now?
My answer to that question off the top of my head would be yes, but perhaps not as pervasive in terms of segment by segment by segment, Catherine. So I think if we're being honest, if the Maple Leafs and or the Raptors had a playoff game tonight, we'd be talking about that game or those games. We wouldn't be ignoring this issue, but we would be covering all of it. And so the show would have more breadth.
Right. That's
just off the top of my head.
Right, and I do agree with that, but I think part of my point is that when something this serious happens, this is part of the problem. Part of the problem is that life does just go on, mm-hmm. and that these types of things do not get this type of attention paid to them, and that is part of the problem. I mean, sports, we all know it's entertainment, it's an escape. I love it for all of those reasons, but that's part of the problem, that everything just rolls, and it gets, you know, a week down the road. I mean, as tragic as it is, it's a good thing that what's happening in the States is continuing to happen with the protests because it's keeping it in the forefront. But if those were to stop, this would all stop.
Wonderful point, Catherine. We appreciate the call. And I did ask that question to Dave Zirin of Edge of Sports and The Nation yesterday. 2 weeks from now, is this still a conversation? Or has the news cycle moved on from it?
We will eventually move on from it. Life will move on, continue to grind forward. Yeah. We will move on.
From the specific George Floyd tragedy, minimize his life.
Yeah.
The issue itself will move on at the conscious level. The issue itself has existed for centuries. The issue itself is there, whether we want to pay direct attention to it or not. And I think as white people in particular, white people of privilege, maybe we got to spend some time, to use an analogy, staring into the eclipse. Maybe we got to burn our retinas a little bit here and get a little uncomfortable. Because there are people for whom this is reality mm-hmm. on a day-in, day-out basis. And if not directly, they have a family member or a friend or, who've experienced all of this. We're actually encountering other people's daily realities. That should bother us. Should bother us.
I think we're all getting... We're learning about stuff that we thought we knew about, but now we're learning it on a bit of a deeper level, and that's never a bad thing.
Yeah,
and Catherine brought up a great point, and it's a very fair question, and I believe you gave a very fair answer.
And to Charlie's point earlier, Hugh, you know, about being experts or not, it really just is about, you know what, and I'm gonna say this, not that I'm some sort of, you know, nuanced individual and others are not. That's not the point I'm making. Some of what I say is informed by the conversations I've had. Like, I consider myself fortunate that I have been able to sit down and talk to some people about the experiences that they have had. These are the messages they deliver. I'm not just sitting here pontificating, saying, oh, this is what it must be like. Mm-hmm.
I actually disagree with Scotty on... would we be talking about the Leafs or Raptors or Jays? I think this issue would be just as big. I'm not really disagreeing. I'm just saying this issue would be just as big, but we'd sprinkle in some Toronto sports. We'd tell you about the score, but I think this issue would still dominate the show today. I hope.
No, you bring up an interesting point. Like, we dealt with the tragedy of Kobe Bryant and did a full show on that, and then he was a theme for most of the rest of the week interspersed. Yep. So maybe there's a topic-heavy show, and then it's interspersed into the remaining shows of the week, dependent upon the news. The one thing that, you know, we left studio yesterday, guys, and we talked about this, which was, geez, wonder what tomorrow will look like. Well, the world dictated what today would look like. It is only ramping up. It is not cooling down. It is not tampering down. Like, this is, we're all living through this. We're all experiencing it. So you make a good point, Ziggy. Although, I mean, if the Leafs and Raptors were playing tonight, we would be remiss and ignorant if we were not.
We would be digging into it. We'd be getting away from what's going on in the world right now. Yes, I'm just hoping that we would be in the same frame of mind to discuss this important issue, because this is on the majority of people's minds right now. And it's not just what's happening in the news. It's not the news cycle. This is something related to sports, something that involves, I think, all the sports, but especially the NFL with Colin Kaepernick, because that's, it's related. How can you not say this is sports related when this is the issue that one of an athlete has taken a stance against?
Well, and I mean, my goodness, Muhammad Ali.
I'm just what I've been experienced in my time, my career. Like, this is, so it's very difficult to separate the two. And I understand the people out there that want us to just stick to sports. I get it. This is like your 1 hour you're with us, or two or three, or with other stations throughout the day. It's just very difficult to put it aside and discuss sports, just sports.
There will come a day where we will have to do that, and we will do that, but that day is not today.
Not today, and I think the world will dictate when that day is, more so than any of the three, four, five of us, six of us involved in this show. I guess the one question I would throw out there for you to consider, depending on where you stand on the whole discussion that we've just had, is, do you want happiness, health, and what is best for each and every person in our world and in our society? And if the answer to that question is yes, I'm with you. If your answer to that question is yes, .. but then really what you're saying is the answer is no. And I'll only speak for me. I ain't with you if you're a yes .. but person.
Not a
but. Yeah, buts. No time for it.
And just to finish off, both great calls. Love the viewpoints.
Yep.
Yeah.
I might not always agree with everyone, but I think they're both, well, they're thoughtful.
Both well thought out.
Important conversations. David Amber, our good friend, at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. J.P. Arencibia, former Blue Jays catcher, now doing some analyst work for Fox Sports Florida, occasionally kicks around the city of Toronto, the old Blue Jay. Major League Baseball put out a proposal to the players a little more than a week ago. The players countered late last week. The owners have countered back. A shortened season, like a 50-60 game season. Where are we going here? We'll ask J.P. next. David Amber at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. So Major League Baseball made a proposal, and I likened it. I used the analogy yesterday and late last week about a football field. And the Major League Baseball owners presented their first proposal a little more than a week ago, Ziggy, and they stuck their stake in the ground at their goal line. And then the Players Association, the union, counter-proposed late last week, and they stuck their stake in the ground at their goal line. And the question now is, how do we get to midfield where both stakes meet and we get some kind of a season? Well, baseball's owners have now counter-proposed the players' counter-proposal to the original proposal, and they are suggesting, hey, how about a 50 or 60 game season in which we pay you a prorated salary? So that is an attempt, clearly, by the owners to mitigate their losses. Well, we're not going to play 100 or 114 games and pay you prorated salaries. And, of course, players are not interested in giving up a dime. But owners are saying, okay, if that's how you want it, we'll prorate your salaries, but we'll do a sprint season, play 50, 60 games. It won't be a marathon. It'll be a sprint. To me, it's an attempt to mitigate losses. I don't see the players going for this.
It's a disaster if they don't play the season. Everybody knows that. I feel like the owners care about that more than the players, though. And they should. You can't just not come back and play because, oh, we're not going to make our $10 billion. What's baseball's revenue? $10 or $11 billion?
Mm-hmm.
It looks bad. The optics of it right now are even bad. So, yeah, you lower the games as much as you can to where it's a legitimate season. And what's the amount of games for that? Is it 80? And I've asked you this question many times.
We can ask J.P. Arencibia, who's on the phone line, this very question too. A 50 to 60, I mean, it intrigues me, the possibilities. But, man, when Major League Baseball starts talking about maybe getting into that NHL-NBA lockout area of 48 to 50 or so games, I mean, baseball plays 162.
I feel like
it's so unique.
You can't go below half.
Yeah,
whatever it is. Just, like the NHL did, what, 48 games the year of the lockout?
That's right, which was more than half of the 82.
More than half. I feel like that. And even some people were calling the time, oh, there's going to be an asterisk next to your name by winning that season. That's come and gone. Who cares if you've won the Stanley Cup that year?
Now, all we remember is Chicago won the Cup
absolutely.
In 2013.
No one has said a word. Like, after a couple months, no one said a word about the shortened season.
Right. J.P. Arencibia, former Blue Jays catcher, is with us now. J.P., do you have an opinion on the number of games it would take for a season to be truly meaningful? I mean, you played. You'd have a real good sense of that or an opinion on it.
Yeah, I think that there's no way that they play without at least playing half of the games of the season. I think that it's kind of asinine to think that these guys would want to play 40 games, 50 games, and then go into the playoffs. But it all comes down to money. And the owners, you know, I watched a clip from Dana White yesterday talking about how he does not expect his fighters to take less money because he assumes all the risk as the owner. That's the reason why he is the owner and he is the businessman. And that's what you do when you own a business. You take on all the risk. You assume all the risks. And so I just think it's crazy for what the owners are proposing and trying to make it a shorter season and make it a longer playoff, because what that is money and revenue at a higher clip for them in their pocket in postseason, but players don't get that money, right? So, example, if the postseason runs 2 months, the owners get a ton, months, but the players are getting just how do you call this? They get a lesser amount of money because they're getting it off TV and revenues as opposed to what their salary is. And what I mean by that is if you make $10 million in the 2 months during the season, those 2 months you're going to make a, you know, your salary based on the $10 million. But if the playoffs are longer, the owners make more money and the players make less. And that's what they're trying to do.
As both of us are former players, though, we're always going to kind of side with a player's point of view. I mean, at least myself, I feel like you're somewhat, you take the same stance on a lot of things. But if the owners are going to take a hit with this year with the pandemic and there's not going to be any fans allowed in any of the ballparks, do you not think the players have to make some kind of concession past the prorated, I guess, reduction in salary? So if they're only going to play half the season, all right, you made $10 million before, you're going to make $5 million now. But then if you're the owner, you're saying, wait a second, I'm going to be losing 40, 50% of my revenues if I come back this year. The players have to meet us somewhere in the middle here. Do you still think the players have to kind of give up a little bit more than they're willing to give up?
Ziggy, you know, as players, you're always going to side with players. But remember, I make my money on players playing now, so I want them to play more than anything, which is why I think that you hear Teixeira and some of these guys who've made hundreds of millions of dollars that are on on TV and doing different things, putting the players out there to try to play. But don't forget this, is yes, they may lose money during this season, right, in revenues, but how do owners truly make money? Owners don't ever make money during the season. They make money as their investment grows. For example, I buy a team at $1 billion. 5 years later, it's valued at $2 billion. That's how owners truly make money when they sell the sell of a team. They don't make money on their revenues by chance every year, which I say that they still make money on revenues, but that's the true way that these owners make money. Mm-hmm. So now are we going to say, okay, well, open your books up and let's see what the value of the Washington Nationals are, you know, 2 years ago, and then now what the value of the Washington Nationals are this year, and because they won the World Series, and all, it goes up, it inflates. That's just like you would in a stock. So that's where, to me, people miss the point as far as these owners are, quote-unquote, losing money, but they're maximizing their value on the value of a team. The Marlins sold for over a billion dollars, and the owner bought in at hundreds of millions. So now are we going to backtrack and go, hey, you lost money all these years? He really didn't, because he made a ton of money on the sale of the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jeffrey Lurie is like a prime example of that down in Miami.
Yeah, I mean that's a great point, right? That is where when you want to buy a professional sports team.
Well, look at Jerry Jones. What did he buy the Dallas Cowboys for back in the late 80s?
Yeah, who cares what you're making per year?
$5.2 billion franchise. Now, what did George Steinbrenner buy the Yankees for? Like $8 million or something in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And when he passed away in 2010, I mean, it's worth billions of dollars and they got their own TV network.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's all of it. JP Arencibia is our guest. Go ahead, JP.
No, and I was going to say, that's why, to me, it's less about, you know, being on the player side, even that I was a player. It's more about let's talk about what's truly going on and how owners truly make money. Because don't forget also is owners make money with all the real estate around the stadiums. Most of these owners own real estate around the stadium as well. So they're making tons of money that they may not claim as they're making towards a team, but they're making it on all the real estate around the ballparks, which most owners own as well. So that's why I think that if we're going to be transparent, yes, I want baseball to play. Yes, players and owners need to come together, but there's got to be some kind of a, hey, listen, actually, this is what's truly going on.
JP Arencibia, former Blue Jays catcher, is our guest. This is Leadoff. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And there's a larger context here, JP, and you were still an active player when the last CBA was negotiated. The bigger picture is that, I mean, there's a potential impending labor war here between the owners and the players, that the so-called labor peace the sport has enjoyed since the players' strike of 1994 ended in April of 1995 may have come to its conclusion. And I don't think that that is lost in this, right? I mean, we have been hit by an act of God here, the COVID-19 pandemic, which has affected not just baseball season, but all other sports and life for all of us in general. But the Major League Baseball owners and the Major League Baseball Players Association are on a collision course and a difficult negotiation of the next CBA. And I think that that is part of the broader context.
You're absolutely correct. I think this is right now a stance on the owners trying to figure out what they can do and how far they can push to make a precedent on the negotiations that are about to happen. I that's what, to me, the whole message is going on right now, is they're using this time to try to take advantage and be able to make something happen to where, hey, you guys took this last year. Why are you so opposed to it now? And that's another big part of this picture of what's going on with the owners and the players, is that's a truly a, you know, talking revenue splits and different things. Now they're trying to get into other sports and things that, you know, I was a part of the union, obviously. They've been trying to get salary caps and this and that for so many years, and you know, all of a sudden now you start softening your stance as a player with what the, you know, what you fought for and what the previous players have fought for. And then all of a sudden the CBA comes up, and then it's like, hey, wait, you guys took these concessions. Why are you opposed to them now? I mean, that's a huge part of this argument, I believe.
Now that they're talking about AAA, it's, I mean, it looks like, I don't know if they've officially canceled the season, but Triple A is going to hurt. You're not going to have Double A, Single A. How much is that, the minor league system not playing, going to actually hurt the development of the MLB product?
Oof. I think, you know, more, you know, where it hurts more, honestly, is pitching to me, because it's tough to simulate 180 innings on a young, or 160 innings, let's say Nate Pearson, right? For example, just to use the Blue Jays, he's a top prospect, and he hasn't pitched a full season, and you want him to pitch 160 innings to get him to feel what 160, because then when you transfer into the major league season, if you make your starts, most of the time you're going to get around the 200 inning mark. So that, to me, is the tougher part, is now you don't have the miles on that arm that are used to a full season. And that's something that I think is tougher, because you can't simulate it. I think for hitters, you can still have the simulation, and guys can maybe adjust a little bit easier as a hitter in the sense of getting at bats. They'll play in the minor leagues, but I can sit there and get, you know, 100 at bats simulated in 10 games, let's say, but a pitcher can't get that many up and down as a start. You know, they have to start, rest the 5 days, and then get back on the mound. I say that also, but here's the other part, is maybe does less miles on the arm make a big difference? Does that mean that now all of a sudden this arm is fresher for a possible next season? Mm-hmm. That's another question, right? If they always used to tell me, hey, you have a certain amount of bullets in your arm, you know, make sure that you take it easy. You don't throw so much, because over a lifespan, you only have so much in your arm. Does now to have a year longer on their career because of this? Who knows? But I think that it's definitely the pitchers are the ones that are in the development phase of this that are going to hurt the most.
JP Aaron CBR, our guest. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. When you envision the possibility, JP, of playing in front of empty stadiums, what do you think that would be like? What do you think that experience would be as a player? No fans in the stands.
Ooh, that is going to be weird. Honestly, I've played a few extra inning games that I'm sure you've, even when I was playing, that you covered. And I think one time in Baltimore and in Boston, actually, I remember we were there at 1 a.m. playing, and it stunk. It's like, you know, you have all, I mean, you hear, it is just a weird feeling. It's just something that feels like almost a high school prospect game. You know, you love to play in front of people. That's kind of what gets you juiced. But I mean, if at this point, I think that guys are so ready in the sense of to play, right? I mean, guys still want to play. It's not guys not wanting to play. Guys want to play, and that's what you do your entire life. So I think that at this point, you're so starved to be able to get in there and compete that you'll make it, you know, as mentally tough as these guys are, they'll challenge themselves to bring up their competitive juices and do everything they need to do, even though that there's fans not in the stadium. It's definitely going to be weird, though. And if they do what they do in the KBO, where they have all those fake fans and stuff like that, I think it'd be kind of funny, but it's, I would like to see what faces they put in the stands.
Opening day, Cleveland 2012, JP, your 16th inning home run that finally broke that 4-4 tie. God, that would not have been a warm day in Cleveland outdoors. You must have had about 10 people in the stands by the 16th inning.
Yeah, and there were Blue Jay fans that had traveled.
Yes.
They stayed in the seats because they're like, man, we traveled all the way over here. Might as well stay and watch this whole game.
There you go. Listen, it's good to hear your voice, and we'll certainly reach out again. Let's hope that there is some kind of season, and we can break it all down with you as it goes on. Always good to chat.
Thanks, bud.
All right, you guys be good.
You bet. J.P. Arencibia, a former Blue Jays catcher, now doing some work for Fox Sports Florida around Miami Marlins games. You can get him on Twitter at J.P. Arencibia 9 and on Instagram at J.P. Arencibia 44. Chris Swanson is the sheriff of the Genesee County Police. That is the county in Michigan, which encompasses Flint. He marched with protesters. He did not stand down or stare down protesters. He marched with them. I don't necessarily want to laud him for doing the right thing. He did what he should have done, but it went viral. And we can talk about a firsthand experience in a flashpoint city in Michigan and in the United States. Chris Swanson, police chief for Genesee County at 8:30. David Amber at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. And this day in history next. This day in history, 1935, 40-year-old Babe Ruth announces his retirement from baseball. Babe Ruth has not played a baseball game in 85 years.
Still talk about him. The Babe. What a beauty. What a just a weapon on the field.
And just svelte.
She loves seeing those.
Just svelte, too.
Replays, like the belt on, it's popping out.
Oh, it's popping. And of course, the quick, you know, cameras back in the in the early 1900s, it just looks so rickety. But man, could he hit. On this day in 1941, very sadly, the great Lou Gehrig died of a motor neuron disease at the age of 37, a motor neuron disease that came to be known as Lou Gehrig's disease, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, ALS. On this day in 1942, Red Sox star Ted Williams enlists as a U.S. Navy aviator. The Second World War is ongoing. Ted Williams missed like 3 seasons. And then when he came back from the war, Ziggy, he was as good after the war as he was before it. It's like he didn't miss a beat. Incredible player.
Imagine taking like Sidney Crosby has to leave the NHL.
For 3 years.
And go over and fight in a war.
Yeah.
Imagine and then that.
Come back and be as good as he was before he left.
I'm not comparing Sidney Crosby to Ted Williams, but I'm just
like
just
giving
imagine.
A now example.
Yeah.
A now example. And Yankees pitcher Whitey Ford on this day in 1958 struck out six hitters in a row to tie an American League record. That doesn't seem like a lot, but it
that
is.
It feels like something I could do. What do you mean?
Six consecutive strikeouts?
It's not that big of a deal, is it?
Somebody call JPR and CB. Get him back on the line. How big a deal is it truly? David Amber on the state of the world. He's an articulate guy. We look forward to hearing his take next. David Amber is the host, one of the hosts of Hockey Central at Noon, one of the hosts of Hockey Night in Canada, the NHL on Sportsnet. He is with us now for his weekly Tuesday guest spot. And David, it's always good to hear your voice under great circumstances and under more difficult circumstances. And I think that's where we find ourselves this week. We are interested in your eloquent thoughts, as we always are on all topics, but no more so than now. What are your thoughts on where we are at today and what we have witnessed over the last week plus?
Yeah. Hey guys. Morning. Yeah, it's been a wild week. You know, June 2nd, 2020, we've got martial law basically in the U.S. Who would have thought, right? It's been a trying week. You know, I guess I'll start with the positive. And I just heard in the update, Jamil Hill on Writer's Block talking about so many athletes and white athletes sort of speaking up, getting involved. You know, I noticed that yesterday, too. I was pleasantly surprised and happy. You know, I cover hockey. I work in the hockey world, and the hockey culture is notorious for, you know, shut up, keep your head down, and just do your job. And it's filled with a bunch of great guys, but many of them don't really feel comfortable stepping out of the box of hockey. Very few of them would be outspoken about topics, certainly not on the record, certainly not in a public forum. I know quite a few players behind the scenes who have a lot to say, but they just don't want to put themselves out there. So I was very happy, and in the update they mentioned Jonathan Toews. Well, I saw Logan Couture and Nick Foligno and Austin Matthews and Tyler Seguin and Blake Wheeler, Morgan Riley, etc. You know, taking cues, I think, maybe all started a few days ago when Evander Kane spoke up and just said, look, if there's injustices taking place, let's not lose sight of that. And when I think about the whole week and what's transpired, guys, you know, we can't lose sight of the fact what these protests are for. The protests are, you know, it's the latest in a long line of social injustices, right? It's been 29 years since Rodney King was brutalized by the LAPD, and it was all caught on tape. And I remember at the time, I was fairly young at the time, and thinking, wow, I can't believe this happened. Well, this is going to change things. And things haven't really changed. You know, there's a long litany of victims of social injustice and police brutality, you know, black males, some females since then. You know, Tamir Rice, Freddie Gray, Eric Garner, Walter Scott, Trayvon Martin, to name a few. And the list goes on. I could be here for a while rattling off people, you know, who've been on the wrong side of things. And, you know, the bottom line is we need to come together. It's not just enough now. You know, this is an opportunity, guys, for people to reflect. It's not enough to be a passive bystander. It's not enough to be a good person yourself. Action is needed. It's not enough to not discriminate and to treat everyone with equal humanity and respect. That's fantastic. That's a great start. But you also, at this point, need to call out when you see injustice, when you see discrimination. The whole idea, this notion of, well, I'll treat people well and they'll treat me well, it just isn't working. We need to step past that. You know, actions and behaviors need to change, both systemically on some levels, but also just individually. And, you know, I think we're being left behind with a bunch of traumatized communities. But the one thing I think we need to be mindful of is, again, what stemmed these protests and have led to some of these riots. Let's not lose sight on what was the cause of it. If people don't want rioting and looting and all these things, and I think every single person can agree that's not what we need. You know what? If there isn't social injustices, then we won't have these sort of protests. And I just think a lot of people, not just the Black community, are tired with what we've seen. And it's a scary direction we've been going in for a number of years, and it hasn't gotten better. And again, I reflected on 29 years ago was Rodney King. We're talking 3 decades. People have been heartbroken, have just felt a lack of humanity towards them. And I think they can't, you know, take it anymore. I think that's where we're at right now. It's a scary time, and maybe this is an important time. Maybe some change will happen. Maybe this is that, you know, that moment in time that we've needed, you know, that seminal moment where things can actually change. It's not white versus black. It's right versus wrong. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. It's right versus wrong. And people need to be on the right side of things and stand together and say enough's enough, and let's move forward together and be a better society.
What are some of the things you want to happen with, you know, we're seeing things online. People are posting messages on Twitter, on Instagram, social media. This is what I like. What does the white privileged person, what can they do to help this everything right now? Have you had people reach out, or is there something what would you say to them, or a group of people say, we want to help. What can they do?
David, and I think just to follow up on what Ziggy is asking you, in some ways, we're saying, what do you need from us?
Well, listen, first of all, I appreciate that. And you know, I'm not going to stand here and say I'm a victim of this and I'm a victim of that, because that's not how I see it. But I do see it as, for a long time, I think people have gone about their lives, and we live in a bubble, many of us, and you get opportunities you might not even be aware of. This is a time to really share that experience, understand, listen, you know, feel, have that empathy and understanding of what it's like. You know, I hear such horror stories, and I've you know, been on the wrong end of stupid stuff in my life too, right? And you kind of just accepted it at certain times, but it's not right. And I think the time of acceptance has ended, and now it's really a time for people to understand what has happened. I think people are seeing the end result. Oh my God, these people are looting, these people are rioting, they're burning up. It's they need to see what has led, what has been the series of events that has led to this amount of anger and frustration to boil over. And I think once there's an understanding and an empathy and a shared experience, it'll be much easier to move forward. You know, I think people have voices. And, you know, whether it's voting, you know, November is going to be a very important, you know, I'm fearful of the next 3-4 months leading up to what's going to happen in this election. I am, just because of the direction things are taking. I'm definitely worried about the direction that we're seeing. I mean, if you just want to look at one thing that's happening right now is, you know, every civilized democracy, freedom of the press, is a key component of that. And we're seeing a loss of that. You know, that's what separates us from authoritative countries. And what we're seeing right now happen to journalists trying to cover the death of George Floyd and the subsequent protests and riots is shocking to me. And that really concerns me. You know, when the president of the U.S. stands up and gives a speech yesterday and talks about protecting the Second Amendment right to bear arms, but doesn't mention necessarily social justice, racism, or police brutality, he's missing a key component. You know, the healing isn't going to start until people feel that their voices are being heard. I mean, Martin Luther King Jr. said, rioting is the language of the unheard. Rioting is the language of the unheard. And that's essentially what's happened now. There's a disenfranchised community who have felt brutalized in many ways and treated unfairly and dehumanized in many ways. And they're sort of saying, enough. This is enough. And I think there's a lot of white people who are standing up and saying, we see this, we hear you, and you're right, this is enough. We need to move forward and be better. And if you're white, you can help. In fact, you can really help, because you can be on the right side of things and you can help push forward an agenda of equality. And whether it's reform on a political level, or if it's just being active in your community and calling out when you see things, you know, not just being a quiet bystander as things happen around you. And I think that would be the most helpful thing people can do right now. It's not just saying, hey, man, I feel for you. It's I'm going to help you. I'm going to stand with you. And, you know, Scott, you were very brave. I can't remember if it was a year ago, a little bit more than a year ago, when you came out and said, hey, I'm a gay man. And you knew there was going to be a lot of people in your corner. And you also knew there was going to be some people who weren't going to be in your corner. And you weren't fearful of that. And I think it's been tough. And if I circle back to the white hockey players, you know, they know a lot of fans that follow hockey might not agree with everything that's going on right now and might look at it through a very different lens, but they weren't afraid to come out of their comfort zone and say, I'm going to stand up for what I believe in. And I think that's a really important thing. And you know firsthand how important that is. And you can feel good about that because, you know, you stood up for who you are, and a lot of people jumped along and were proud of you and are proud of you for doing that. And I think we're seeing that now from a, you know, a racial disparity of things around us, that people need to stand up and be on the right side of things.
With David Amber, I'm gonna say the phrase to you, David, and then I'm gonna let you play off of it, because what I'm looking for is your instinctive reaction to said phrase. So I am putting you on the spot. Here's the phrase, and you react. Stick to sports.
I, you know, and social media is perfect for that. And we saw that actually with a number of ESPN broadcasters a few years ago when they stepped out and wanted to have their editorialize their personal opinions into things. I don't believe we're one-dimensional beings. You know, this transcends anything. I would be saddened if we're so one-dimensional and we can only be consumed in one aspect. I have zero value to you unless I'm talking about hockey. Well, I'm sorry. There's more to me than that. There's more to you. There's more to Ziggy than that. You might not agree with every opinion. How do things get improved in society? By discourse, by conversation, by understanding, by learning, by listening. I'm not the most political person on my social media because I just sometimes don't want to deal with it. You know, Elliot Friedman put out a fairly innocuous retweeting of a Washington Post article yesterday about, you know, what transpired last night with the president making sort of this grand statement with the Bible in his hand, this photo op. And go read his mentions. I mean, it's not pleasant, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't want to be in that situation. I'm not going to be told to be quiet. I'm not going to be told not to have an opinion on things. I'm well-read. I'm educated. I have an opinion, and I'm going to state it. And quite frankly, if you're not interested, then you step away. Because my platform is my platform. I think everyone should feel that way, regardless of what their political leanings or beliefs are. You know, it's funny, the U.S. makes such it's so important to them, the First Amendment, freedom of speech, but then people don't want to hear their freedom of speech. So, that gets me a bit bothered. I know so many people in our field, so bright, so well-read, have a lot of great opinions to share, and I don't always agree with the opinions, but they can articulate them and argue them and have great debate about them. That's how we get better as a country. That's how we get better as a community. And right now, the notion of stick to sports, here's a newsflash. There are no sports right now. Mm-hmm. You know, if there was ever a time to not stick to sports, it's right now. That always bothers me, and I think those people are small-minded. Anyone who would say stick to sports, they can only consume you in one way. Well, that's on them. That's not on me. That's not on you. They need to be a bit better rounded and well-rounded in how they consume things. You know, imagine if we did that in other fields, right? Right? you can only do what you're paid for. That's all you've got. Everything else, just be quiet on. I'm sorry, that's not how it works. So, yeah, that gets me a bit bothered. And I think now, if ever, that notion is just, it's an antiquated notion and a silly idea from the top.
We had a caller earlier on the show saying, would we still be talking about this in depth throughout yesterday's show, today's show, if sports were on? And it's an interesting question because, you know, you'd think right away, well, we'd be talking about the Leafs, the Raptors, the Jays, right? It's just, it's difficult to really answer that because we don't know. I would hope that we would still be, you know, talking about this in the same depth as if sports were on, but it's kind of tough. What do you think about that?
Well, listen, I think this is going to be an issue. There's three police officers that were involved in the murder of George Floyd have not yet been arrested or brought to justice in any fashion. Period. Until that happens, I can't imagine these protests slow down. I can't imagine the temperature of many people doesn't boil over. One man who was kneeling on George Floyd's neck, who ultimately killed him, has been arrested on third-degree murder charges, okay? There were three other cops involved. One stood and watched complicitly. One stood on his legs, one stood on his back, and were involved, in my opinion, at least, in the murder. He's pleading for his life. I can't breathe. I'm going to die. He's calling for his mother, okay? There was zero humanity there. They're there to serve and protect, and instead they kill an unarmed civilian, okay? Until these three police officers are brought to justice, in my opinion, this is going to remain a relevant news story. Yes, if the Stanley Cup Finals were on right now, if the Jays were playing, if the Raptors were making another run to a championship, on this platform alone, would we be spending the time we're spending on social injustice and everything going on? Of course not. Of course we wouldn't be. But there would be an undertone to all those things taking place. I have a hard time believing we would just randomly in the background be playing all these sports while something so serious was taking place. And there was these protests and riots throughout American cities. And there was a protest here on Saturday, about a kilometer from where I live here in Toronto. So I think it'd be a mixed bag. But you know, again, this notion that we're only caring about these things, we're only discussing these things because sports isn't taking place, to me, that doesn't really understand what's happening here. You know, we can't lose sight. This is a big moment, guys. This is a seminal moment that's taking place. And hopefully this could be a moment of change, of legitimate change in society. I'm not sure that's going to be the case, but I'm hopeful. And sports is always a great escape, and we can all use it right now. But I don't want us to lose sight on what's taking place and what we need to be discussing to better ourselves as a community.
David Amber is our guest. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'll ask you a question that I asked of one of our guests yesterday, Dave Zirin. David, and I've asked of many guests through the years when topics such as this come up, are you optimistic or pessimistic about where we're all headed?
Well, I'm worried. I'm worried about the direction that we're going in, that we're seeing in the United States. You know, I wasn't alive in the late 60s during the civil rights movement and everything that was going on, but it just seems to me we have been, you know, the temperature has been rising and we've been moving in the wrong direction for some time. And you know, I don't like getting so political because I think things are so polarized right now that as soon as you have something negative to say or positive to say, then people kind of dig their heels in and don't listen. But here's what I'll say. The reason I'm worried for the direction we're seeing, especially in the United States, is there's a leader there, in my opinion, doesn't have the judgment or the temperament, you know, or quite frankly, isn't empathetic enough to put himself in other people's shoes to lead the nation and put it into a position where it's best positioned to heal. To me, you need to have some healing. You need to allow people to say, I hear you, I feel you. What can we do together as a collective to make things right? He isn't that type of person. You know, if anything, he goes the other way to be as ruthless as he can be to show his power, which is, I think, what we saw last night. And that, to me, there's a division there that I just don't ever recall seeing. You know, we've lived through, you know, I've lived through a number of Republican presidents, Reagan, both Bushes, et cetera. And I've been for some Democrats, you know, Jimmy Carter, Obama, Clinton, and never at any time. And there was always differences of opinion and there was always, you know, ideological differences, but never at any given time was it this polarized. It's an us versus them mentality in so many levels. And we're seeing it on racial division right now in the States. That worries me. That really worries me. And what leading up to November, I've thought this for a while now. I'm nervous, guys. November, if Donald Trump gets reelected, you know, that makes me nervous. If Donald Trump doesn't get reelected, the 10 weeks between November 3rd or 4th, whenever the election is, and January 20th, when the inauguration of the next president would be, Joe Biden, I guess, what would that time look like? What would happen during that time? These things concern me. I'll be honest with you. They don't keep me up at night every night, but I think about them often. So I am concerned. There's a long way to go. And I think, again, I think it's a nation that needs healing. And I think we as a society are going to hopefully move in that direction. But I'm not convinced that the leadership's in place to begin that healing.
Wonderfully stated, David. Thank you so much for your insight. And we'll look forward to talking next Tuesday.
Yeah, stay safe, fellas. And, you know, thanks for the time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave.
David Amber is one of the hosts of Hockey Central at Noon here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And one of the hosts of the NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. Chris Swanson is the Genesee County, Michigan sheriff. He marched with protesters in a video that went viral. We're not going to bring him on and laud him for doing something that he should have done, but we do want his perspective on the situation that he sees in his area. Flint is a town with significant challenges. Among other things, there has not been drinkable drinking water in that city for more than half a decade. It is lead infested, and it is a problem that just is not getting solved. It is a predominantly black city, and Chris Swanson is putting in the work to try to bring people together. We'll have him comment on his efforts. Next.
We want to be with y'all for real. So I took my helmet off and laid the batons down. Yeah. I want to make this a parade, not a protest. Come on. Come on. That's it. You got little ones here, you got dogs, so what's up? So listen, I'm just telling you, these cops love you. That cop over there hugs people, so. You tell us what you need to do.
That is Chris Swanson, the Genesee County, Michigan sheriff, an athlete and a public speaker as well. And Genesee County encompasses the city of Flint, Michigan. And he is going to join us in just a couple of minutes. Our understanding is he's doing an interview on CNN right now. And Ziggy, we're looking forward to talking to him. I want to be very clear that we are not bringing him on here to laud a white man in a position of power for doing the right thing. Doing the right thing should be the baseline off of which we all live.
Mm-hmm.
But we understand that the situation is complicated, and we want to highlight people who are taking steps in the right direction and get their thoughts on ways that we can all contribute. And so we're looking forward to Sheriff Swanson joining us here in just a couple of minutes.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, you don't want to go too far in discussing what, you know, if you're doing the right thing. We don't want to put people on a pedestal at this point, and we're not doing that. I the reason we're having him on is, I think if you're watching the news cycle at all, there are parts of the country where people are protesting peacefully, and they're being physically, I don't want to say abused, but being moved from where they are, or being told to go around a barricade, or in some instances, being run over, whether they're getting in the way of where police officers are trying to go. There's tear gas being used. So when you see stories like this from Chris, where instead of doing that, he's joining the protest, he's doing it peacefully, he's getting involved for the better good of what we're trying, you know, the message we want to send. And I do think it's good to highlight that, but you know, we're not going to say that this is we're not putting them on pedestals, I guess. I don't know a better way to say that.
Right. But we do want to highlight positive steps that are being made. And he was very clearly in that video welcomed. He was welcomed with open arms by the protesters. And people are looking for allies in this situation. And I think it's incumbent upon us to listen and to try to educate ourselves. I don't have answers. Nor should I expect myself to have answers. So if I don't have answers, then I need to ask questions and count on others to answer them for me. I think it was important. You know, one of the things we struggle with as we book these shows, Ziggy, is we don't want to laud white people for setting or for achieving the very lowest of the bar, which is simply doing the right thing. We also don't want to just say, well, who can be a token black guest to talk about the crimes committed against their own community?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because then tokenism doesn't do us any good. We are pleased to say, and we had a wonderful conversation with David Amber. Donovan Bennett, our good friend here at Sportsnet, is going to join us tomorrow morning, and he has written a wonderful piece that is posted on the front page right now of sportsnet.ca. We do need Donovan, and we do need David Amber to speak to this. But we also need to speak to this.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking to this is also to do a lot of listening. And listening not with the intent of replying. I think I've been guilty at times in my life of being ready with my reply before the response to my question has even been uttered. So the goal of listening is actually to listen with intent. Okay, I want to try my best to understand, and I want to learn. And I think that's where we've all got to get to here. And I think so many people are well-meaning and want to learn. We get shouted down very rarely. We get the odd text to 590-590 telling us to shut up, stick to sports, throw a conspiracy theory or two at us about the cause of all of this and blah, 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 the deep state cabal and yada, yada, yada. That's just, if you're going to believe that, you're going to believe that. I'm not here to change your mind. You're lost as far as I'm concerned. But for well-meaning people who do want to learn, this is where we are in the world right now. We got a pandemic that has affected the entire globe, has changed our lives and shut things down. And we now have strife that has come as the result of a specific murder, that of George Floyd, but really is a reflection of a broader issue that dates back to before the actual birth of the United States of America. And obviously well before the birth of Canada, since our country is a little less than 100 years younger than the U.S. These are systemic issues that have existed for centuries. They didn't start with Martin Luther King. They didn't start with the beating of Rodney King in 1991 in Los Angeles. They didn't begin with Trayvon Martin a number of years ago. These issues have existed since prior to the birth of the U.S. They are pertinent and perpetual on our continent. That's undeniable.
And the hard thing about it is, why can't it just be better today? But as we all know, things like social change don't happen overnight. So the battle's going to be, can this be, I don't want to say, use the analogy stepping stone, but can we use this situation to push things like social justice and get rid of racism? Can this, can we use this? And this is what we talk about, how the cycle. Well, is it just going to be on TV? Are we going to talk about it for a week and a half? And then all of a sudden it's buried and now we don't hear about it again. Like you just mentioned, you have all these different events. You have all these different people come up and speak out and change the way we live our lives. Can we use this and can we improve the social injustice? Can we get rid of the racism? That's what this is all going to come down to. And I hope this is not just a 7-day or 10-day thing. We know how cycles work. Masai Ujiri talks about this, how it just, we talk about it for a week and then all of a sudden it's swept underneath the rug. And that's the hard part. That's the hard part about this is, we talked yesterday, what's going to make things change? Is it a social media post? Is it you calling a friend? Is it you making a donation? Is it you calling your local representative? Is it going to be you voting? Like, there's all these things that can be done. It's just hard because, like we said yesterday as well, you're going to vote? Go and vote. Go and love your family. Well, go and protest peacefully. What's that going to do? I know those things will help, but that's when you're going to get the riots. Go out. Like, I don't understand. You hear all the backlash. Oh, why are people right? What do you expect them to do? Like, it's enough of go and vote and go home and love your family. Yes, I agree with these things can change and help, but we're all tired. People are tired of it.
It doesn't often occur to us from our privileged perspective that maybe the system doesn't work quite as well, or more aptly put, anywhere nearly as well for others. And so it does come down to shelving our own life experiences and denying the life experiences of others. It's shelving that perspective and saying, no, I'm going to take you at your word that this is what you live through, that mm-hmm. this is what you experience.
Mm-hmm.
And my concern is that racism is so fundamentally ingrained in the culture that we don't even recognize it, because again, it predates the existence of both the United States and Canada. We are hoping that Sheriff Chris Swanson of Genesee County, Michigan, the county that encompasses the city of Flint, will join us on the other side. Our understanding is he's giving an interview to CNN. And so that has pushed his time back. We are counting on him to call. And so what we'll do now is take the break and hope that we have Sheriff Swanson when we return. All right, we are in communication with Sheriff Chris Swanson's people. We're told that we are next on the list after he completes his interview with CNN.
He was on CNN yesterday with, who was he on with? He was on CNN yesterday. Someone sent me the clip and said, "Hey, this is Chris is coming on the show tomorrow." I said, "Yeah." So it's, you know, be interesting to hear how everything went down and why he decided to do what he did. Did he talk to other officers? Did they decide to, was this something pre-planned or just on the spot? Hey, this is what we need to do. This is what's going to make the situation better. And they, we want to make a difference. And that's what he did. And this is better than the alternative. What we've seen. We've seen tear gas. We've seen barricades. We've seen cops. I mean, in New York City, we've seen cops, try to move vehicles to move people out of the way. And instead of doing that, he decided to walk with protesters in a peaceful way and help the situation instead of, make it worse.
Sheriff Chris Swanson of Genesee County, Michigan, hopefully joins us in just a little bit. Major League Baseball, Ziggy, has a decision to make here very, very soon. I mean, let's be honest. Within the next week to week and a half, we are going to know whether there's going to be any kind of a baseball season. And the two stakes are at the opposite ends of the football field right now, as I have used that analogy, and we've got to get them to the middle somehow, some way. The owners have come back with a counterproposal in which they have offered to pay players prorated salaries, but for a 50 to 60 game season, which of course would be played with no fans in the stands. And so we're sitting here saying to ourselves, on the surface, how do you get from an 82 game proposal by the owners to a 110-ish game proposal by the players down to 50 or 60? Well, owners are now saying, hey, we got to mitigate our losses, right? We're not going to have any butts in the seats. That means no ticket sales. That means no beers sold. That means no parking if you own the lots around the stadium, merchandise, etc.
I'm sure some of the teams that aren't making the revenues that the top tier teams are making, organizations, just don't want to cut checks for millions of dollars if they have no chance to bring in the revenues. It just, I understand the richer teams that own their own networks and sports channels, and they can broadcast the game, and they have all these different, streams of revenue. Yeah, they're okay, but this is one of those things where, you have to feel for those teams that aren't making the money that the big teams are making.
Do we have Sheriff Chris Swanson on the line? We do? All right, Vic, just give me the thumbs up when he's ready to go. All right, Sheriff Chris Swanson of Genesee County Police, the county that encompasses Flint, Michigan, is with us on Leadoff. Sheriff Swanson, we appreciate your time. We know you're extremely busy. The video of you joining the protest in Flint over the weekend went viral. Can you set the scene for us? Obviously, a snippet of video only sets the stage of a small period of time. How did your decision to join the protest, which stands in stark contrast to some of what else we have seen across the continent, how did that come to be?
Well, first, good morning. Thanks for having me. And I would love to say that it was like this great plan and it was all strategized, but it was not. It was an act of the heart. When we had these protests planned, and of course, it all started with an 8-minute, 40-second video that evaporated all the good inroads we have made throughout this nation and around the world for community policing. As the days progressed, the violence became more intense, and we felt that on that day. So at 5 o'clock Eastern time, we had groups gathering. By 7:30, they were in the hundreds. We had them marching up and down the street. Everything was cool. And then when they turned towards the police department, a small police department, I saw that this was going to turn out very similar to what we've seen around the nation. And as they came up to the line, and we had our fortified line there, just like you've seen around the nation, is helmets and shields and batons. I literally thought to myself, how did we get here? How did in 10 days we go from heroes to villains? And the intensity of the crowd was one that I've never seen. Today's my 27th year on the job. I've never experienced that much anger and fear on both sides. The police were just as scared as to what was going to happen on the other side. But I saw some fist bumps. I saw a small little hug, and that was my cue. I thought, we can go in. And because of through years of experience and training and serving people, and just taking care of people, I look back now and I watch the video, and I'm not trying to be a hero, I'm not trying to be macho, but it was a natural reaction to go and make peace. I took my helmet off, they put the batons down, and I walked into the first shot caller and I said, brother, and I gave him a big old hug. And I said, what do I need to do? Because that guy is not who police are. He said, you need to tell the people. And the intensity was still there. I could tell you it's probably the worst tactical move I could have done. I told the people that what he did is not who the police are. These cops love you, and these cops work for you. They'll die for you. And then the second question, my friend, is what made history, and that is, what do I need to do next? And they said, walk with us. All they wanted was a voice and someone to hear it that had some words behind it that meant action. And to your point, it's a long answer to a short question. It was the most intense, angered feeling that immediately went to hope and peace. And Flint put themselves on the map with all the things that are going on and have gone on in our country and at our city, from water crisis to crime to pandemics. It was that moment that Flint said, we can protest with righteous anger and not burn our city down.
Sheriff Chris Swanson is with Genesee County, Michigan, which encompasses the city of Flint, Michigan. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. As Sheriff Swanson, are you involved in the hiring of police officers in your county?
For the sheriff's office that I'm at, we are the ninth biggest police department in the state of Michigan. I know every one of my people. I've hired everyone. I know them by name. They are my family. So the answer to our office is yes.
Okay. So my follow-up question is, can you explain for us the vetting process that you go through to ensure that prospective hires do not have, as best as you can ascertain, do not have racist ideologies or any ties to white supremacist groups?
That's a great question. And I'm going to tell you, it starts with the hiring process, of course, interviews and background investigations and testing and physical testing and vetting and interviews and all that. Of course, we take it all the way back to social media, where they went to high school, blah, blah, blah. But that's just a snapshot of somebody coming in as a young officer that wants a job. But I'm going to tell you, throughout someone's career, it's the fruit on their tree that determines what's in their heart. So when you see people that even after a year, 2 years, maybe they've had a great 3 years, they've passed probation, but all of a sudden you notice that they are treating inmates or people on the street with anger and inciting, that's the red flag that the police around the country need to pick up on. And if you have somebody that's heavy-handed, all right, we're going to put them in check. We're going to find out what happened. We're going to discipline them. We're going to send them to training. If it happens again, it's not an accident. If it happens a third time, it's a pattern. Fire them. I've charged my own people with crimes. I've arrested my own people out of their beds. I have a guy in jail right now who committed a sexual act on duty. Police have to know when a wrong is a wrong, you call it out. And when it happens in law enforcement, it has a greater consequence, and the public want to know, because that's the frustration. Are we held to a different standard? And the answer to that is yes, it's a higher standard.
What do you say to people that are calling for more police reform in the U.S.? Is this something that's discussed within your department? And I just want to know if you think this is something that needs to be, you know, discussed and handled right away.
Absolutely. And I'm going to tell you that, you know, leadership is where it starts, and it starts from the top. And I'm a student of leadership. It's not anyone's expertise. It's a journey. And that filters down. So from the top of any police organization, the official, the executive sets the tone. All the way down the line, if we think that we've achieved the pinnacle of policing, then we have missed it. This is a constant reform, and George Floyd changed American policing and global policing because of his death. We cannot handle situations like that. We can't respond the way we did for future. Otherwise, this country and around the world will continue to have what we have right now. And I will tell you, if the roles were reversed, and this is where it comes in as a frustration, and a police officer was belly down, handcuffed, begging for his life, and someone had their knee on the back of the neck, it would have been a deadly force shooting. So why do we have any different rules for the police? So to your question, sir, police reform has to happen. Race reform has to happen. The situational and the institutional racism, that has no part in American history, world history. That has no part anymore. And it starts from internally. So it's more than just training. In fact, I had a question somebody said in one of the news about, you know, is this a training issue? This is not. You don't need to train somebody to have dignity for others. That's a heart issue, and they don't belong in law enforcement.
Sheriff Swanson, we so much appreciate your time this morning. Know you're busy. We wish you the very best. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Met Sheriff Chris Swanson of Genesee County, Michigan, which encompasses Flint, Michigan. The video of him marching with the protesters went viral over the weekend. We are back at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Good Show is next.